This is the November 12th edition of Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention in Kansas City. Today, a special program. We'll talk with Murray Wise of Murray Wise Associates. And then a bit later in the program, Darren Fry of Water Street Solutions will be here to take a look at what happened in the world of agricultural markets. Here the way the settlement prices came in from Chicago on a Friday afternoon. December wheat, a high this week at $7.60¾. Remember, we give you the high, the low, and the settlement price from the overnight and the daily trade, and then the weekly change. The settlement price at $6.69¼ in the December wheat, down 59.5 cents from Friday of last week. July futures, the harvest month, $7.44¾, down 57¾. December corn this week, a high of $6.05 a bushel, a low at $5.34. Settlement price down 53¾ at $5.34. December corn future of next year, that's the 11 contract, at $5.09¼, down 46 cents. The high this week in the November soybeans, $13.37¾ a bushel, the low at $12.59. Settlement price, $12.63, down 10.5, and November of next year at $11.77, off 45 cents on the week. December live cattle futures, a high this week, $99.85, the low at $97.50, settled $98.40, 85 cents higher. And the November feeders, $112.40, 100 pounds up, $1.80. December lean hog futures, $69.65, the high, the low at $66.50. Settlement price at $68.97.5, $2.02.5 higher. And December oats, $3.39.5, finished down 35¾.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Stay with us. In a moment, we'll talk with Murray Wise of Murray Wise Associates about land values. Let's talk about Murray Wise Associates first. That's a new name. Well, it's an old name, your name. But how did it come about?
Well, it came about, Todd, from the point of view that one of our large clients, our large institutional clients of the past, TIAA CREF, had approached us first about 3 years ago about the possibility of buying us as the platform for them to take a global ag investing business, and I truly mean a global ag investment business globally, if you will, on the basis that they just saw tremendous opportunity in a short period of time and what could be done within the area of agriculture. And they convinced us a number of years ago to enter Australia, which we did. Two or three years ago, we had two employees in Australia at the time of them acquiring us September 30th. We had eight employees in Australia, and we had more acres in Australia, not more dollars, but more acres in Australia than we had here in the United States. So again, TIA purchased us. Randall Pope is now president and CEO, who had been with me for many, many years. I still have an equity interest, as does Randall. And I still serve on their board of directors, but again, they acquired the asset management business and the farm management business and the real estate business of Westchester Group, with the exception of our Iowa office and with the exception of our Westchester auctions business, which will now be operated under the umbrella of Murray Wise Associates, i.e. the auction business and our Iowa office. They did not want the Iowa office because it's an anti-corporate ownership state. and the pension funds, state governmental pension funds and pension funds cannot purchase in an anti-corporate ownership state. So that's kind of it in a nutshell. It's a very good relationship. The headquarters is going to stay in Champaign, which was very important to me. But they not only kept all of the employees who worked in those business units, but they will be adding additional employees very, very soon in Champaign to expand that business and grow it from there.
So those who have Westchester Farms, will they see any difference, do you think, in what's happening, at least in the near term?
Not one item, Todd, on the basis that it's still going to be called Westchester and that there will be no change other than they continue to have an appetite to acquire more Midwestern farmland, and there's a greater chance that instead of farming one, two, or three farms for us, they'll have four or five farms potentially to lease if, in fact, they're successful in acquiring them.
Let's change topics just a little bit. You're satisfied now with land auctions. I'll say satisfied, but that's your point. So let's talk about the price of farmland, where it might be headed, and where it has been. Prices seem to be inching back higher again.
Todd, prices are not only inching back higher. Prices have dramatically in the last 4 months moved higher, and. In one sense, because I personally like to get another farm or two bought, and I have a lot of individual investors I know that would like to get another farm or two bought. So, you know, I'm not totally ecstatic about the move higher, but it has occurred, and I don't think you and I are going to change it. But it's simply a set of circumstances where there is a lot of interest in farmland today. Now, the neighboring farmer is still the dominant buyer. Let's not hide from that fact. But the same token, there's a lot of investor interest in pursuing additional acres of farmland from an ownership point of view. Yes, we've moved dramatically higher, as we've already redundantly touched on here, but at the same time, I don't see us regressing and moving back to lower levels. The demand, the global demand, particularly the Asian demand for commodity prices, is just intense, and it remains intense, and I don't see that changing, quite frankly, on the basis that there is just a lot of food demand around the world. Example, if I can, Todd, real quickly, I was in China in May, and the largest computer manufacturing company in the world, who manufactures for HP, Dell, Motorola, many of the computer companies, they have 280,000 employees. While I was there in May, they gave all of their employees a 30% pay increase. And again, I don't know many people in the United States in 2010 who received a 30% pay increase. What are those Asians going to do? What are the Chinese going to do with that money? First and foremost, they're going to feed their family better. And that is going to create significant demand growth for Illinois and Indiana corn and soybeans and wheat and other commodities.
I'll stay with that for just a minute. I wanted to come back to another thing, but on that demand growth, do you have projections about what that really means, not only for the price of farmland, but for the demand for commodities?
No, I don't, Todd. In fact, I was visiting with another individual this morning where I made a comment that the commodity financial analysts, who should have a real handle on this at the moment, I don't think they have a handle on it, quite frankly. I don't think anybody is really successful today in projecting what kind of demand really exists in Asia. The first question you have to ask yourself, are they rebuilding inventories? Are they rebuilding stocks, which have been depleted? Or is this, you know, just a new demand that's occurring? And I don't think any of us know the answers to those questions. And until we know the answers to those questions, I don't think anyone is going to properly put into perspective that real demand growth that you've asked me if I have numbers regarding.
Price of farmland, and I want to go back to that. Tell me about quantitative easing, or the, and I'll go with the nomenclature, the easy one, the printing of money by the U.S. government. What impact do you think that may or may not have on the farm economy and interest rates in particular?
Well, first of all, I think that two things are going to happen. I think interest rates are finally going to inch higher, even with, and again, I like your expression, and let's be real, it's printing of money. QE2 is just a fancy word for printing of money, one way or the other. No matter how you cut the pie, you're absolutely correct. It's printing of money. And I think interest rates, particularly long-term rates, are on the verge of inching higher without a doubt. But the real key to your question is, what is that going to do? I see nothing but increased, and I think dramatically increased, inflation in the 2 to 5 year window looking down the road. And that's part of what's driving farmland right at the moment, and that there's just a significant desire to own hard assets, and those hard assets are going to appreciate at levels that, frankly, I don't feel comfortable with, but they're real and it's happening, if you will.
Can interest rates take the assets value down?
Yes, in some areas, but I really don't think that's going to happen because, you know, if you look at the first decade of the 2000 to 2010, first decade of the century, you know, we had stock returns, Todd, of like 0.6 or 0.7% annually for a 10-year period of time. There is just a real distaste at the moment for conventional stock and bond assets. They're not in favor like they have been in the past. With that, hard assets, whether it be farmland, whether it be gold, silver, copper, whatever, are really being valued at a different level than they've been at the past. I actually think the rate of return on farmland, as an example, will decline in the next 18 months on the basis that I don't think rents are anywhere near going to keep up with the price change that we've experienced in farmland. Henceforth, the returns, in my opinion, are simply going to be, have to be, lower. And I think that's occurring. But again, you know, what happens with will interest rates, you know, take some hard assets lower in price? Yes, some, but not all. And I don't think they will in the case of farmland.
Do you have any wisdom that you can account for what might happen in the distant future when things might change, when that asset might actually level out, when it might drop in value? There's always a concern that an 85, 86, 87 could return to the marketplace given the rapid ascent that it has taken place in the last 3 to 4 years.
Well, first, Todd, let me say that with the actions of our government, and I'm not, this is not a Democratic or a Republican comment, it's a government comment, with the actions in the last 24 months of our government regarding spending of money, I don't think we have any alternative that inflation is one of the only solutions to the problems we currently face, and that's not pretty. But keep in mind, you know, 30-some years ago, I graduated from university. I had the great luxury of subscribing to the Wall Street Journal. It was 15 cents. Today, that same Wall Street Journal is $2, okay? And just because, you know, farmland is $10,000, and I'm not saying that's the number in the near future, but let's say it's $10,000 an acre. You know, it's all relative to if everything inflates sort of simultaneously, or even if both things inflate, including hopefully your wages and mine inflate. I mean, it's just a trading of dollars, if you will. It's not that we're any richer. We just have, you know, more dollars to spend on. Instead of, when I was in university, you could buy a brand new Honda 350 for $300 and some from a dealer in Wisconsin. I remember many of my buddies going and buying them, okay? You can't buy, you know, that same Honda motorcycle for a multiple of that today.
I'll bet you've thought about this. Can you talk to me a bit about the crude oil market and how it's changed and its influence on the commodity markets, on the price structure in agriculture?
Well, it's certainly one of the major drivers, and it's definitely, Todd, one of the items that have driven the costs of farming an acre of good, high-quality Illinois or Indiana farmland significantly higher. You know, I can argue that at $85 it's overpriced. I can argue that given the current demand we have, led by the U.S., followed by China, they're number one and number two relevant to creating the demand for crude oil, that there's no alternative for it to be very high on a go-forward basis. But keeping in mind that it's also one of the major costs, as I've touched on a second ago, from a fertilizer point of view regarding the operating farmer, it's a very serious question. And yet, it's my understanding here at NAFB, there was a speech yesterday by the former president of Shell, I don't know if you heard it or didn't hear, who said that in less than 5 years, America is going to be in deep, deep trouble regarding the availability and the supply of crude oil. And he was projecting much higher prices. Now, from my point of view, given my farmer hat on, you know, I hope he's wrong and I hope we have lower prices. But again, the jury is still out on the final conclusion there, needless to say.
Thank you so much for taking the time with us today.
Nice to be with you and your listeners as always, Todd. Thank you.
And thank you in advance. I'm going to put you on the spot for joining us on the 8th day of March for our All Day Ag Outlook. at the Beef House.
We look very forward to that. As you know, I visited with your cohort, Dave, this morning. He's got some great ideas regarding subject matter for your day at the Beef House on March 8th. I mean, Dave is really giving us a lot of hard, heavy thinking relevant to leasing alternatives, going into the future, management structure, the importance of marketing, all those things that all of us know are important but don't probably spend enough time working on. So it's going to be exciting to be with you and your audience and your other presenters on March 8th.
Thank you so much. Murray Wise is with Murray Wise Associates. We'll be back here on Commodity Week in just 2 minutes.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. A much cooler than normal first week of November has been followed by a much normal and warmer second week of the month. Temperatures this week averaged from 9 to 13 degrees above normal across the state, with the warmest weather in a relative sense in the northern part of Illinois. High temperatures pushed into the 70s much of this week, with the benefit of plenty of sunshine. A few daily high temperature records were set during the week, especially in northern and central Illinois. There was no precipitation this week at all until Thursday, when some light showers developed along a cold front that managed to push into western Illinois. And showers accompanied the front as it moved slowly through the state through the end of the week. While we need the rain, we are really lucking out so far in November. Wet November can be a truly miserable month in Illinois, but so far it has been absolutely delightful. However, all good things must come to an end, and so will the warm, dry weather. By the end of this weekend, cold air will spread south through Illinois. Temperatures next week will average near to below normal, which means we will be seeing highs in the mid-40s north to mid-50s south. There is a possibility for some scattered precipitation across the northern half of Illinois about Wednesday, when another cold front should move through the state, but otherwise most of the week should be dry. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This is the November 12th edition of Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Our guest in the second half of the program today, Darren Fry of Water Street Solutions out of Peoria, Illinois. He serves as their president and CEO. He's also at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention in Kansas City. Darren, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
One note. This interview is being recorded on Thursday afternoon, not Friday, so we really haven't seen the markets for the week. That's all right. We talked with Murray Wise in the first half of our program, Darren, about land values and cash rents. Your company actually deals quite a little bit with those sorts of issues for producers. I'm wondering, with commodity prices going higher, is it a good time now to take on more ground?
Well, it could be. We recommend that a person start with a financial analysis. They need to understand where their working capital is. They need to understand what they're going to be able to bid that ground and secure it. And really the sundown on that, what is the length of that lease? So is it a 1 year, a 2 year, or a 3 year? There is a lot of profit margin out here to be had, but one must manage it correctly and not lock in too long of a time horizon to where these prices that we're now receiving for grain could top out and then head lower and stick you in a lease that's too long for that amount of cash rent. So one has to look at that time horizon. One has to look at, can I make money, and what is a fair price to bid to be able to secure that?
Does that differ very much from one clientele or to another in your business?
It sure will, because people are leveraged differently. Some people have a lot more own land and they cash in a little bit. Some people cash in everything. Some is on the shares. So it does differ, and then everybody has a different amount of working capital that they come to the table with. So what's particularly important in this scenario is these prices, while going higher now, and I believe they will go higher over time, aren't guaranteed to stay here. So the length of this contract is very important.
Well, talk to me more about the length of the contract. How long do you want to lock in if you're cash renting, crop sharing, and do those two things matter very much? And how long do you want to lock it in at this point?
Well, if a person's only looking at 1 year, looking at 2011, they can get pretty aggressive on cash rents. But most landlords are putting out leases a little bit longer than that. A person has to look at that time horizon and deduct what they're willing to bid, because I think prices, while going higher into the spring for sure, are not guaranteed to be higher at the fall of 11 or into 2012. We're just a year away from raising a big crop, and if we do that, well, price is cheaper than they are today. If we don't raise the crop we need next year, then it looks like locking in a little longer lease for cheaper would be better, because we'll have higher prices come 2012.
Let's turn your attention to the commodity market specifically. Talk to me about the corn market. USDA's projections from earlier in the week. WASDE report was out. Crop production report was out. Again, they lowered the national average yield for corn. They increased usage, though, for ethanol. But it was a bit of a wash. The usage ended up down 50 million after they took out the exports and dropped feed usage just a bit. Do you think the marketplace is at a point where it's topping? Is it at a point where it's making a decision whether it needs to go higher and then go down, or go down? One of those two things. What kinds of advice would you have for a producer, and what do you think specifically about the commodity market?
Well, the corn market in general, I think, has to go higher. That doesn't mean it doesn't have an opportunity to break 30 or 40 more cents. The bean market was up strong today on Informa numbers, and corn couldn't lift its head today. It never got more than up a couple cents. So corn is kind of relaxed right now, letting beans lead the way, and it's content in doing so. But I think corn has to go higher. I think the numbers that you saw from the USDA last Tuesday on November 9th are going to continue to shrink. I think they'll have to lower the crop probably another bushel or two in January. It looks like to me that the yield is not there and demand is, and they'll have to continue to massage the numbers on the S&Ds. But I think it's an acreage battle. I think that's what the interest is going to be going forward. We look toward 2011. We got to secure these acres, and I think old crop values, both corn and beans, are going to be underpinned by this demand and this rationing need, while new crop acres are underpinned by just how do we secure them? How do we secure them for the 2012 balance sheet?
You sound awfully confident, but there are things, it seems, on the horizon that could, I don't know about push the market very much lower, but could allow that to smooth out. For instance, the next report from the United States Department of Agriculture is the quarterly grain stocks report. That report will show the first set of usage for the year. There's still 150 million bushels thereabouts that may yet come to roost, that appeared and disappeared in the last two quarterly grain stocks reports. And I'm wondering whether how important that one will be. And then, of course, the ethanol tax for the blenders is set to expire January the 1st. And you have to make an assumption that at this point, it will expire. Lame duck Congress, not likely to take it up, I don't think, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, there's a lot of uncertainty in everything, isn't there? You bring up some good points, Todd, but I think the stocks report is the next key numbers that we need to see. The government threw us a curveball by increasing stocks on September 30th. A lot of us wonder where those came from, because on June 30th, they cut them substantially. Lending us, or leading us to believe, I should say, that maybe the 09 crop wasn't as big as we thought. That's why the stocks got cut in maybe June. But then in September, they came roaring back to just be dodged again by the October crop production report. So everybody's eyes are going to be on this December stocks report, just asking the question, did they find more bushels or did they find less because of the current demand? ethanol pace is really strong right now. They did reduce export sales. Those are lagging. That has me more concerned than anything. Are we rationing some of the demand right now with export sales? So, you know, what could go wrong? Less exports, less tax credits for blenders come January 1st. But somehow I think they're going to come through with that. Somehow I think the government will come through with that. Ethanol is a big part of what we do. I don't think they abandoned that. I think they support it even more. So my hunch is we got numbers to get through in December. We got these exports to reconcile. That's going to have more to do with the dollar than anything else. And, yeah, I think we're underpinned here by people that need to buy it underneath the market.
For the producer on this 2010 crop who's got grain in storage or to sell, whether it's at the elevator or in the home bin, are you a willing seller at this point of another increment?
You know what? We're holding a lot of our 2010 corn crop. We've been a more active seller of soybeans on a scale-up basis as we've rallied. We were kind of proponents of the corn crop gets smaller, the bean crop gets larger. The USDA lowered both of them here last Tuesday. The beans were a surprise to us as a firm because we just think the bean crop was better than the USDA has said it is. So having said that, I think it's always good incrementally to push out some crop. We've made a lot of money holding crop. But you have one of two choices, leak out some on a scale-up basis or make sure you buy some short-dated puts underneath the market. I think we have too much profit to protect to sit there naked. However, I do think the price has to continue higher, at least into February, until we get the acreage secured.
Which is your preference, to go ahead and make the sales or to cover it?
Well, that really comes down to the individual producer. I think buying a put and keeping the grain in the bin will make the producer more money. Because if we're right about the direction of corn and the rationing of demand and the acreage battle, corn will make more money in the bin even though you throw away the put money that you spent in a commodity account. If we sell the grain and try to re-own it with a call, you never participate penny for penny in that. So I would prefer just throwing some protection under it and keeping the corn in the bin. I really think we could have some basis plays also coming into spring and summertime of next year.
Tell me about the soybean market. USDA, as you mentioned, managed to decrease the national yield for soybeans the last time around. Surprised Water Street Solutions as a firm, but I take it you're still steadfast in your opinion on that marketplace.
Well, I never argue with the USDA. They have way more information than I do, but we were expecting higher bean numbers just because the producers that we work with, and we work with several producers in many states, have tremendous bean yields. Their corn yields have been a problem, but their bean yields have been good. So we expect the USDA to increase those, but they didn't. And, of course, we know the appetite China has had buying soybeans because their crush margins are good. So we would continue to feel like the bean market can rally. This is a very tight carryout, and I think it's made the acreage battle a lot more interesting. We never thought that beans would be the leader, and now they really are. Corn is lagging. Corn is the one that has to come up now and compete for acres, in my opinion.
Darren, any final word from you before I let you go for the day?
Well, I think one thing I would say to all the listeners that are agricultural producers, we're coming into more volatile times than even 2007 leading up to 2008. And if you're going to sell grain ahead, you know, make sure you consider buying calls for reownership. If you're going to sell grain ahead, make sure that you buy your inputs. I think we can get in a lot of trouble when we try to do one side of the transaction, not the other, and we kind of get cute with the market, and it gets cute back with us. So be careful. There's going to be a lot of risk and a lot of reward, and that's where the market's going to sit coming into 2011.
Darren Fry is the president and CEO of Water Street Solutions in Peoria, Illinois. You've been listening to Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Remember, you can always visit us online at willag.org. That's willag.org.